In just 10 minutes, NPR's live coverage, gavel to gavel, the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump continues with day three. We have two experts to join us to talk about what the expectation is for today's arguments. Yesterday, there was a tremendous amount of repetitive recitation of the arguments against the president. With us is Margaret Russell, professor, Santa Clara University School of Law. Professor Russell, great to have you back with us. You expect we're going to hear more of the same today?
Well, I think you're going to hear, since this is the schedule, you're going to hear more of the House manager's case against the president with a fair number of interruptions for, you know, motions, amendments, discussions, responses, et cetera.
All right. And so we continue with the prosecution case. At what point will the defense be offering its rebuttal?
I believe that is scheduled, since the time is divided evenly, that that is probably going to start on Friday.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And at this point, what do you see as the comparisons with the Clinton impeachment? To this point, is it similar or not?
Well, it has some similarities, in part because it's a very rare occasion to have an impeachment of a president, and now this is our second experience with it in our lifetimes, or in, you know, most people's lifetimes now who are paying attention now. And I think the important thing to remember, though, is that it's not like precedent that is discussed in making court decisions. In other words, it doesn't have to be exactly the same procedure as the Clinton impeachment. And so that, I think that's why you hear a lot of arguments back and forth about whether it is or isn't. But there's no judgment that can be pronounced on that, because it actually can be different from impeachment to impeachment. It's a very rare occurrence.
Today, the argument, abuse of power, the argument that the president engaged in that with the alleged quid pro quo with the Ukrainian president over release of security aid. What is the value in the length of time for these arguments to be made? Again, because I think for the listener, the arguments one is hearing are so redundant. Is there particular value in taking all this time to make the case?
Well, I actually don't think they're redundant, and I think that this isn't too much time. I mean, it's chosen in part for partisan reasons, right? The 24 hours divided so that people have their chances. But let's remember how important this is. It is a rare occurrence. And I think it's really the process that is on trial as well, that is as open and transparent a process that we can have for the American people, particularly voters, to see what our government is doing and if they can step away from partisan roles. I think that's really important. So it's not too much time. And I think so far the time is actually being used with a lot of substance.
We're talking with Santa Clara University Professor of Law, Margaret Russell. Also with us, partner at the firm Baker Hostetler, David Rifkin. He's held positions in the Department of Justice and in the Office of White House Counsel. Elsewhere in the federal government, he's served largely in Republican administrations. Mr. Rifkin, thank you very much for being with us. What do you anticipate we'll hear today?
More of the same. I would gently disagree with Margaret. And we're not talking about the substance here. We're really talking about sort of a art of oral advocacy. I'm an appellate lawyer. I'm used to, you know, 20-minute, half-an-hour tops oral arguments. I watch portions of Mr. Schiff's presentation. I would say if I were supporting his position, which I'm not, I would have urged him to have a crisp, much shorter presentation. As you pointed out, he's been redundant. I thought his visual aids were kind of boring. I don't think he's carrying even the TV audience, not to mention the senators. So and look, it really does not need 12 hours spread over 3 days to make the case. The House case, underlined both articles, I think is entirely specious. I've said it before, I've written about it before, but irrespective of this, the factual evidence that they put forward is sparse, and all the endless And look, I'm a constitutionalist. I practice constitutional law. It's the love of my life. But I wouldn't have had hours of endless repetitive quotes from the framers. It just doesn't get you anywhere in terms of article advocacy. So I don't think it's particularly impressive.
When we hear from the president's counsel, one would anticipate they're going to argue that the president didn't do anything wrong in either he or his team's engagement with Ukrainian officials. Do you think that that's the right approach to take, or would it be better for his team to cede that the president shouldn't have raised the issue of the investigations of the Bidens in his contacts, but that it doesn't rise to the level of what a president should be impeached for?
Well, look, I think they're going to do some of both. My personal view, and you heard me say this before, and as I said, I've written about it on four different occasions for Wall Street Journal in the last 3 months. What the president is accused of doing by the Democrats does not rise, as a matter of constitutional law, to the high crime and misdemeanor, and therefore is not impeachable. And to crystallize it very simply is because he was exercising the core foreign affairs powers of his office. In doing so, there can be only two circumstances where he can commit a high crime and misdemeanor. One, that he violated some statutory law, which he did not, or he's done something that violates some specific constitutional commands, like withdraw money from Treasury not a consequence of appropriations, or suspend habeas corpus, as President Lincoln did in the early, provide congressional authorization in early stages of Civil War, or, for example, refuse to faithfully execute a given statute in its entirety, which is called a suspension power of the Constitution.
Okay. So you disagree with the Governmental Accountability Office's analysis of this, which found that his withholding the money violated the law.
I disagree with it, but it's not even important. What's important, if you actually look at the statute, first of all, numerous presidents have used flexibility in dispensing the money appropriated by Congress, provided the money was dispensed in the same fiscal year.
Okay. All right. I need you to hold that point because I'm almost out of time. Margaret Russell, Santa Clara University, your response to Mr. Rifkin.
Well, listen, I'm an educator and a constitutional law professor, and I'm not going to spend my time telling people what to conclude. I think that this is a constitutionally mandated process. It deserves all the time that it needs with evidence and witnesses, and that the people who benefit from this in the Constitution are the people who've elected these representatives. So I would urge people not to be dismissive, not to be sort of short attention span about it. You can turn it on and off, but the point is this is a historic process set forth in the Constitution, and it is people deserve to hear the arguments and decide for themselves. I'm not going to just take one side and say, oh, just listen to me. No, this is for everyone.
Margaret Russell, thank you for being with us again. She's professor of law, Santa Clara University, and David Rifkin of the firm Baker Hostetler. He served in a number of Republican administrations, the Office of White House Counsel, as well as the Department of Justice. Stay tuned. NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial continues in seconds. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock for an early full hour of Air Talk on KPCC.